away we go. The fourth, the final, the best of the money hour. The Rob Brown Show starts now. It is the Fan Upstate. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Spectacular to have you here on the show. I am Rob Brown. The great one Lonzo is over there. And now it is time for me to begin this handicap match that I find myself in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. when we are joined here on the show by the executive producer of BetMGM Night. He is also an NFL and NBA betting analyst for the BetQL Network, the former executive producer of Bet for the Cycle, which airs every Saturday from noon to 4 on the BetQL Network, starring former MLB player Cody Decker and me, Ron Brown, maybe the handsomest duo of hosts anywhere in the country. Hating ass Mario. Mario Heron from the BetQL Network here on the show. We missed you the last couple of weeks because the BetQL Network has been relatively busy with a brand new lineup of shows pretty much every day, every hour, except Saturdays noon to 4. And for some reason, they decided to hand you responsibility.
Yeah. Hey, what are you going to do? We got BetMGM Game Day every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Eastern with Jason Lock and 4, Kate Constable, and Joe Ostrowski. And we have BetMGM Tonight that you can catch Rob on every Tuesday at 8 p.m. with Brad Evans and Ryan Horvath. So make sure you guys all tune in. It's a good time. And side comment, who do I need to pay at the Fan Upstate to take all of the audio of me pumping up the Panthers and to burn it? And to burn it all, just burn it to the ground, I'm willing to pay $50.
I got you, man, for free.
Thank you. Never happened.
So let's talk about it very briefly. Because this is where I was going to go anyway right out of the gate, so I'm glad you brought it up. I apparently am the last and only optimist here. I'm like the last of the Mohicans, but it's positivity. All right, over here I got the power of positivity for the Panthers. Here's my thought, Mario. Let me lay it out on the table, and then you can shred it as you see fit. I got a young first-year head coach who's only in his second year of play calling. He's working with a quarterback who has gone through, during his NFL tenure of 1 year, a dumpster fire with Frank Reich and Chris Tabor last year and David Tepper and all that he's caused the problems with as his only time of experience in the NFL. The wide receiver core brings in a new number one in Deontay over from Pittsburgh to be the number one. It moves the number one Adam Thielen down to number three into the slot wide receiver. It moves the number two receiver, John Mingo, who was the number four last year, and you bring up Xavier Leggett to be the number four receiver, a rookie, brand new wide receiver core. I've added two offensive guards. It moves one of my tackles over to center, meaning I got one old tackle, one new tackle, a new center, two new offensive guards. As far as the offensive side of the ball goes, everything is brand new, and Dave Canales made one major mistake, which is he only played the starters for like one series in the preseason. If you don't think that patience is a virtue in this case, I don't know what to say. Yes, that was a bleep poor performance. Awful performance on Sunday. And to a team I still think is going to be very mediocre. I said this with you guys Tuesday night, that I think the Saints are the most smoke and mirrors team from week one. That's my own team, and I believe that. But did anybody think this team was going to come in and just look like gangbusters out of the gate? Come on, man. Like, it's going to take some time.
I'm with you. It's going to take some time. But the thing that kind of brought all the alarms in my head in this game was, this wasn't like you were facing the Niners. It wasn't like you were facing the Lions, Eagles, I'll throw Cowboys, like a team that is competing to win the NFC. You're facing a divisional opponent that a lot of people would call rival. In those games, we always talk about when you like come to handicap it, those games are weird. They're always somehow close, and they somehow come down to the last second. And, you know, you have those weird instances where said team is 3-10. They play the team that's 10-3. The 3-10 team wins. Why? Because it's a weird rivalry game and those weird things happen. They faced the Saints, and the Saints did that to them. They beat the living crap out of them. They made them look like a high school team. All three phases of the game looked bad. Pick on the first snap. Defense led up scores on Saints' first nine possessions. Special teams gave up a blocked punt and a long punt return. All three phases, terrible. Then you lose your Pro Bowl defensive tackle. On top of that, I had faith. I'm not selling all of the stock. I'll keep one, but a lot of it's gone. The divisional opponent thing is the part that scares me the most. And I think having the Chargers in week two is also not a good sign. Because if there's any coach in the league that wants to send a message more than Jim Harbaugh, I would call you a liar. He's the guy that's going to want to pound the football. He's going to want to get his receivers activated. He wants Joshua Palmer to have a very good day. He wants Quinn Johnson to keep building up confidence because, boy, does he need it. Because on a one-on-one with no safety over top, he can't win a matchup. It's a tough spot for him. I think it's only going to get worse. That game's going to be 20-0 in a very newly improved and physical Chargers defense, which I don't know if you saw last week. Joey Bosa looks like the Joey Bosa from 2-3 years ago, and that's a scary man.
I don't disagree with that. And I would go so far as to say, yeah, you're probably going to lose to the Chargers this weekend, especially if J.K. Dobbins is going to be J.K. Dobbins like he was J.K. Dobbins last week. Harbaugh warned us we're going to run the ball, and now the Panthers don't have Derrick Brown to help stuff the run up the middle. So, yeah, listen, I'm not trying to argue that this is like a 10-win football team. I'm not even trying. I'm saying I took over 4.5, and so did most people. That's why they are I think, one of only two teams whose win total was increased by Vegas during the offseason. What I'm saying is, yeah, that game wasn't competitive. And yeah, that game looked awful. And it did look awful. That game was awful. What I'm saying is it takes time to lay a foundation. And I don't think, Mario, that people are – I think fans do this frequently. I think they look at what's happening from sideline to sideline and goal line to goal line, and that's just all they consider. And they don't consider ownership. They don't consider coaching scenarios. They don't consider all the other, because it's not just Dave Canales. Like I said, it's all the dumpster fire that was the Frank Reich hire, the dumpster fire that was the end of the Matt Rhule era. It was having two interim coaches in the midst there. All these things compound and stack up into a breaking point, and I think the breaking point was this offseason. And as I pointed out to Lonzo earlier, the big trigger on all of that is Dave Tepper. Quick question. What have you heard from Dave Tepper since Dave Canales was hired? Not a damn word, right? So I am hanging on the optimism that Tepper figured it out and he's getting the hell out of the way. And I'm going to let Dave Canales have some time to fix the room covered in diarrhea that was left behind after the last 2 years.
I will agree with you on that point, is give Dave Canales time. Like, I'm a big Canales guy. I said, you know, coach of the year long shot, like that's kind of worth something. Give him time to keep building something there. Because, again, like you said, there could be something there. The team's very, very young. Bryce Young's still a very young quarterback who just went through, what, technically a third head coach right now. So that's going to be very hard for a young player to kind of get to that and overcome that. And, you know, you mentioned that receiving core. It's not like he's walked into a situation where he got Keenan Allen, Roma Dunze, and DJ Moore. Like, no, they traded away his number one guy and said, here's Adam Thielen, who is a career number two wide receiver, who's on the tail end of his career, and going, make the best of it. Like, that's what he got. Like, it's not a good hand to get. You know, he's playing poker. He got, you know, 4 and a 7 off suit. And the board, he looked at it, and it's a king, and it's queen, and a 10, and he's going, guys, I am in trouble. Didn't get a great hand. He's going to have to figure out from there. I want to, you know, shut the door on this, I guess, whole quick era of Bryce Young. But at the same time, just keep your expectations low. Very, very low.
I think that's fair. All right, let's talk about some other teams around the league. We talked about it. I talked about it with Brad and Ryan on your show yesterday. We'll talk about it here on my show, and I'll give you the chance to answer the same question. Let's start with an individual team. People want to make it out like the Dallas Cowboys are back. And isn't it just another year where Dallas is going to look good all regular season long and wipe out? Like, why are people getting excited that Dak got paid and now Dallas is back? Dak was doing this last year, too, and then they got wiped out by the Packers at home. Are we buying Dallas, or is it just another year of the narrative?
Another year of the narrative. I'm old enough to remember last year when in week one they beat the Giants 40-0 and we had this kind of celebration once again. Then they beat the Jets 30-10 and again we had this celebration. Oh, and then came the Cardinals who beat them 28-16. Something similar could happen this year to the Dallas Cowboys. They face the Saints. I think they beat the Saints. I think that's a pretty easy win for them. I think they even cover in that game. I think big regressions come in for the Saints on that end. But the Cowboys defense, let's give props to them. They looked good. They picked off Watson twice. They only allowed 93 rushing yards. They looked very, very good. On the flip side of that, they put a Browns team where Deshaun Watson is not even 2% of the player he used to be. And then you have their best offensive player is still not back for the Browns and Nick Chubb. So are we really, really going to like validate that win? Like, are we really going to hold that high for the Dallas Cowboys? I'm not going to. I still don't believe in Mike McCarthy at all. I don't think he's a good coach. I think he's a bad loss away from really losing that locker room to a whole different level, and then it really becomes an explosion. The regression's going to come. I don't think it comes this weekend against the Saints because I think the Saints are going to have a big come-back-to-reality moment. I think it's going to be next week when they face the Ravens, and Jim Harbaugh is going to be pretty pissed off. John Harbaugh, I'm sorry. I've been talking about Jim too much. That's when I think that's going to kind of – they're going to come back down to reality and say, yeah, we are – middle of the tier playoff team and nothing more than that.
Talk to me about the Saints. Are they real or is this just the result of playing a bad Carolina team? Because I told you last night, I told Brad and Horvy last night, I still think Dennis Allen's one of the worst coaches in the league. That didn't suddenly change. But you also add Derek Carr, who coming into this season, I've talked about this a lot, underappreciated. Guy's one of the most efficient, not electric, not exciting, but efficient quarterbacks in the league. He doesn't miss open throws. Doesn't make any that are like getting him on SportsCenter, but he doesn't miss open throws. And he came into the season going, look, I was banged up all last year. He had the shoulder issue, the head injury. Like, that guy was a walking MASH unit. He said, I'm excited about the offense. We got playmakers. We got speed in Shaheed. We got Olave, who can catch anything that's within 1,000 miles of his hands. Alvin Kamara is back, and he certainly looked at 83 rushing yards this past week. Jamal Williams, who is a national treasure, and we must protect that man at all costs, and I will go to war for him, okay? Like he said, this offense is going to be different and something special, and they bring over Clint Kubiak, who ran the passing offense for San Francisco the last couple of years, which, you know, got him to some Super Bowls when he was in charge of it. On the flip side, Dennis Allen, and this team's very old. Should I be optimistic, hating ass Mario, or should I just follow my gut and prepare myself for massive disappointment in this team?
Get ready for massive disappointment because the key thing you said there, they're very old. And in the very old, you look at the next four games and they have very tough matchups. So they have Cowboys this week. That's tough. You have the Eagles after that that you host. And then you have the Falcons who, yes, they were kind of a disappointment, but there's a lot of talent on that team. And it's a divisional game, so it's going to be a rough one. Then you play the Chiefs in Arrowhead. Whew, there's going to be some back to reality-ness that you're going to see in these next couple weeks for the Saints. And that's just the way it goes in the NFL. I think this team is probably, as of now, the biggest threat to kind of take their division over the Buccaneers because apparently the Buccaneers just didn't lose a beat this offseason. And again, we can go ahead and erase the tape of me crapping on the Buccaneers 100%. I still think they're the best option to kind of take that team out just based off what we saw in week one. But I wouldn't be too high on them going, oh, they're going to be a wild card team. Oh, they're going to be in the playoffs. I wouldn't go that high yet. I think you still need to see more. Now, if they go in this four-game stretch and they win three out of the four games, I think then you have every right to go, hey, this team's legit. Hey, this team's for real. Hey, we have something cooking. But if they go 1-3 during this, I think you see, all right, guys, we're just, you know, we're in the same spot we were last year in this purgatory area where the franchise can't make a decision if we need to go forward or go backward and just completely tear it all down. And we got to start at one point, wake up and smell the roses going, our roster's pretty old. It's time to revamp it.
I agree with that entirely. And I to the point that because of what I said to Dallas a minute ago, like even if New Orleans goes to Dallas and beats the Cowboys, yeah, the vibes get high. It doesn't mean I'm ready to go Super Bowl champs, but like the vibes will certainly pick up. Week one. Biggest surprise to me was not Carolina getting throttled by the Saints. It was New England, who I think is the worst team in the league. I'm not changing that up today, beating Cincinnati. Now, on one hand, no T. Higgins, got a busted hammy. Jamar Chase had practiced for, I believe, 19 seconds this offseason before he strapped on the helmet to play week one. But since then, something interesting has happened. There's a lot of footage of Joe Burrow flexing that wrist and kind of working it out. There's a video of him picking up a Gatorade bottle and then kind of looking like it almost hurt to pick that up and having to switch it to the other hand to use it. Are we in panic mode about the Bengals?
So before we get into any of that, let's just all take a second to remember that Zach Taylor is 1-10 in the first 2 weeks of the season. So they've never been a team that starts off strong in the Zach Taylor era. They always start off slow. They always start off as a team that you go, hey, they lost it this year, and then they turn into the Bengals that we all know and love them for. Joe Burrow. It looked in that game that he wanted to throw it anywhere but downfield. He wanted to do dump down. He wanted to be Drew Brees. That's what he wanted to be. That could be a concern. Could that be the risk? It could be. Could that also be that he's had receivers hold out and that the chemistry is just a little off? And when you throw, you know, the longer you go, the more trust needs to be there and more chemistry needs to be there. Flip side of that, how much chemistry does he really need with T. Higgins, Jamar Chase? You know, like, he's played with Jamar Chase since college. They know each other pretty well now. So the trust should be there. It's going to look worse for Cincinnati. I think the panic button is a little bit there. I think this week, like, Chiefs, I took it at 5.5 yesterday, which I hate 5.5. That's my, like, least favorite number in all of betting. It's just, like, kick me in the nuts as you take my money. But kick me in the nuts, take my money, bet MGM. Like, that's where we're at, baby. I took that at 5.5. I bet it again at 6. I think the Chiefs are going to welcome the Cincinnati Bengals in an Arrowhead, and they're going to put Burrow ahead everywhere around that locker room, and they're going to kick the living crap out of them. I think it's going to be a message game. I think they're going to turn up the pressure on Burrow. I think they're going to go, hey, we're going to force you to throw the ball downfield. Let's see how good that wrist really does feel. It's going to get worse for Cincinnati. This is not going to be a pretty game. 154 passing yards against the New England Patriots. Welcome to the big leagues. Welcome to a defense that's won Super Bowls with a defensive coordinator that's arguably top three in the league. It's going to get worse for them. And if you go 4-for-11 on third down against Kansas City, you might as well just go ahead and take the loss and not even play the fourth quarter.
I don't disagree with that take. The only way Cincinnati escapes is if T. Higgins comes back and they have the full complement. If they are down at all, I think they're in trouble against Kansas City. Don't disagree at all. Hayden asked Mario. Mario Heron is an NFL and NBA betting analyst for the BetQL Network, also the executive producer of BetMGM Tonight with Ryan Horvath and Brad Evans. You can hear that show right here on this station every single weeknight from 7 until 11 p.m. He is also the former executive producer of Bet for the Cycle, which airs noon to 4 on the BetQL Network. And is a guest at my wedding next weekend in St. Augustine. Hayden asked Mario, are you ready?
I'm excited.
I'm not even going to make you get the tattoo while we're down there. We're just good vibes only.
Well, I just picked out the outfit.
Let's go.
From the wedding. So there you go.
Let's go. Yeah. I like
it. And I just remembered I have to pick up my dry cleaning because I was supposed to pick it up on Monday. I still have not done that.
Mario's still learning how to adult. It's cute. Thanks, big dog. We'll talk. Actually, we won't talk to you next week because I'm off on Wednesday, but I'll see you in Florida next week, pal.
I'll see you in Florida, the Sunshine State. Let's get weird on the dance floor.
You know what's happening. Hey, Nas Mario. Mario Heron from the BetQL Network here on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. All right, short segment here, so I'll bring this up very quickly. It is official, finally, the United States men's national football team has a new gaffer, a new leader, a new manager, and that manager is Mauricio Pochettino. He got the official hire yesterday, a two-year contract. It is a two-year contract because that will ensure that he is in charge through the summer of 2026, of course, the year that the United States of America will host the World Cup. They are going to make sure that the Argentinian is in charge of the program, a program that last night found themselves fighting with New Zealand to a 1-1 draw. It was not ideal. For the Americans last night, as New Zealand was able to pop a goal late in that contest to save a draw. Captain America Christian Pulisic very not up or not happy with the performance. And in the post-game interview, they said, hey, how do you expect Mauricio Pochettino to step in and culture build around here? And Pulisic said, there should already be a culture. We shouldn't need to build a culture. There should already be a culture. This should be a team with the talent we have, with the ability we have. This should be a team that already has a culture, an identity, and we just don't. And he's spot on. He's spot on. It absolutely should, and it just doesn't. This should be a team. This should be an organization, a federation, that even if we are not competing with the Argentinas and the Italys and the Germanys and the Englands and the Spains and the Frances of the world, it is a team with a country of 300 and what is it, 30 some odd million people in it, that should have been able to forge and craft an identity. And when you have what at least on paper is the most talented roster of American soccer players that you have ever had at one time on one roster, it kind of stinks that you've got to bring in a manager from elsewhere 2 years away from not just playing in the World Cup, but hosting the World Cup. What is happening now should have been happening 6 years ago. Not now. What is happening now, 2 years from the World Cup, should have been happening before the last World Cup. But it didn't. And it didn't because the U.S. Soccer Federation had its own head so far up its own rear end. It was so ingrained in promoting the MLS. It was so ingrained in just sheer and outright nepotism that we effectively wasted 4 years. But it was just wasted 4 years. And so now here we are 2 years away from the World Cup. Actually, less than 2 years away from the World Cup now, obviously. Less than 2 years away. And we're roster building. I mean, we're roster building. We are just finding and signing a gaffer at this point. It's not a good look. Now, with that being said, I'm actually relatively excited about the hiring, all right? Do I think it's a slam dunk? I can't say it is. Pochettino does not have a ton of, actually no experience coaching international footy. And coaching international football is very different than coaching domestic league football, right? Now, Pochettino has a ton of experience coaching domestic ball. And not just coaching domestic ball, but coaching domestic ball at some of the biggest clubs in the world. He has coached at Paris Saint-Germain. He has coached at Chelsea, et cetera, et cetera. Tottenham Hotspur. Some of the biggest organizations in the world he's been in charge of. So he's got that experience, and that's good. The guy knows pressure. There's not more pressure in coaching than coaching English Premier League football, than coaching French top division football. You can't do bigger than that. Right? That's getting an NFL job in the world of soccer. But he doesn't have international experience, and there is a difference. Because with international experience, you got X amount of days, weeks, whatever, to bring in guys that have learned everything they've learned at domestic clubs and go, that's great, put that aside, we're doing this for this club. And if you don't get that right, we're going to fail. And I don't know if that's going to be something he can do or not. But as far as what was on the table, what was available for Team USA, it's as good of a hire as they've made in my lifetime. We'll see how it plays out. Congrats on a good hire. Back after this on the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show continues. It is the Fan Upstate. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment of the show. Spectacular to have you here on the broadcast. Let us keep rocking and rolling here on the show. I got a couple more sound bites for you that I want to run by you. One of them I am going to play because I'm actually pretty excited about the career of this young cat. That's JT Sanders. Jatavion Sanders, the tight end out of the University of Texas, who got drafted by the Cats this past season. I'm actually significantly excited because I think JT Sanders is a guy that has got all the potential in the world. He is absolutely a pass catcher. He is a guy that has the ability to block and set the edge. And I think that when you combine those two things and you have some speed, And JT has some speed. We saw a little bit of it, flashes of it during the game this weekend. I think you've got a combination that has a lot of potential ahead of it. Well, one of the things that I like to talk about for Rucks is that you got to have your welcome to the league moment, right? Especially for Rooks that are very talented and come out of Power Four schools. When a kid comes out of a Power Four school, and a Power Four school where they had success, and they come out of a Power Four school where they had success and were a dynamite player on that team, sometimes they come into the league with the expectation that that's just how it's going to be. And you know the guys that I'm talking about. There is one of them right now. As much as I have been a defender for some time, one of them plays quarterback for the Carolina Panthers right now. I do think there is a little bit of that Alabama success in the head of Bryce Young. And I think last season kind of showed him, nope, you're actually going to have to work. You're going to have to try. Well, JT Sanders had himself a little bit of a welcome to the league moment this weekend. And in a quick interview yesterday, he talked about it. Like that from JT. He went with the Gardner Minshew. Because he is. Chase Young's a dude. It's a dude. Remember, and not just is he a dude, but he's in New Orleans on a one-year deal. This is a guy trying to extend his career, trying to extend his contract, trying to extend his NFL ability for another season and, get paid next year. So he ran through JT Sanders' face. JT said, that was my welcome to the league moment. They said, what are you thinking about when that happens? And he says, I'm not going to let that happen again. I get it. I like it. I think this kid has got a ton of potential. Again, yesterday, when I was getting the final little bit of work done on the rig, while I was in the shop yesterday, I sat down and I watched every play of that game from the All-22 camp, from two angles, All-22 from the side, All-22 from behind the offensive line. And I watched JT Sanders. He's quick off the football. He's got a good first step. I think there is going to have to be a little bit of development as far as recognizing and understanding where routes need to be broken off, where routes need to be followed through. I think there was a couple of spots where if JT Sanders gets underneath a linebacker, he presents a better target for Bryce Young. But instead, he ran his route. And again, he's a rook. Can't get upset about a rookie running the route that is called for him on a particular play. But I think there were some spots where, and this is something that you got to work on with your quarterback as well, but there are spots where I thought JT stayed on his assigned route, where if he would have broken the route and modified the route, he could have done it with the understanding of Bryce Young. Now, again, maybe I'm going to give him benefit of the doubt here because we've played 1 week and he is a rookie. That was game number one for him. And the only reason he was starting is because of injuries to Tommy Tremble and Thomas, the other tight ends on the roster, who were expected to get the start. It was his rookie game, his year one, week one. There was going to be some level of nerves for everybody in that game, I think. It's going to take time to develop chemistry with Bryce Young or whoever's playing quarterback, Bryce Young or otherwise. But there were spots in that game where I thought, all right, if JT breaks this route off, if he modifies this route, right? Maybe it's supposed to be a 5 yard out. Linebacker's sitting at 5 yards. Now, if 5 yards is what you need for the first down, that's one thing. But part of the job of the tight end in the passing scheme is to manipulate coverage. Part of the game is to manipulate coverage. It's to pull guys into a position or out of a position. It is to move a linebacker out of a pocket where another wide receiver is going to come through, or to force a linebacker to stay home so that a combo route elsewhere will work for you. That's kind of the goal. But he's also meant to be a target. You didn't draft Jatavion Sanders to be a distraction. You drafted him to be a threat and then become a threat. You know who you drafted him to be? And I know that this is big aspirations, big shoes to fill for a guy who's played one game. You drafted him to be Travis Kelce on Monday night. On Monday night, sorry. What night did y'all play? Thursday? Yeah, Thursday night last week. On Thursday night last week, Travis Kelce did not hit any of his projected numbers. You know what he did do? Open up the floor for like three other guys. Three other guys did hit their numbers. And those were all directly attributable to Travis Kelce because Travis Kelce is a threat every time he puts on a football helmet. And so you ended up in a spot, I thought, where other guys were the beneficiary of Travis Kelce not hitting his numbers. I think you know you have that in Jatavion Sanders. You have a dude that you can do what you do with Travis Kelce. You don't want to cover him? You don't want to respect the modified route out of TK87? Cool. Patrick Mahomes is going to put that football in his face mask and he's going to eat you alive. You want to overcommit to Travis Kelce? Cool. Rashee Rice is going to run right to the spot that your extra defender on 87 vacated. That's Jatavion Sanders. That's what I think he has the capability of doing. I'm not saying he's got Travis Kelce skill. I don't know. We haven't developed the guy. He's played one game. But I think that's the role he can fill. And the fact that he got his welcome to the NFL moment, good. Good. Because those are the kind of things you need. And when you get him out of the way early, I think you're in a good spot. All right, one thing I want to do before we get up out of here. This is a clip I found on social media during the show today. And I listened to it. And for the purposes of the programming, I'm going to assume it's real. All right? I'm going to assume it's not a work. I don't know if it is or not. This is the post of a dad who said he got called up to the school to address a situation involving his child and a bully. I want you to listen to it, and we'll play a baby version of Faces or Heels. Good dad, bad dad. Good dad, bad dad. I'm going good dad. All right? I'm going, my kid's getting a trip to Chuck E. Cheese that night. My man knows he can't win the fight. Can't get into a fist fight. All right? You can't win. Even if you could get into it, you can't win the fist fight. So you go about it other ways. You go about other ways. You subvert. You play the long game. You play the mental game. And that is exactly what this kid did. I don't know what Pops did here. He didn't say, I took him out to the arcade after. We got a pizza. You know, I let him stay home. We went to a baseball game. I don't know what he did. I assume he did. It's what I would have done. I love this. Good dad, bad dad, Lonzo. Good dad, bad. I'm going good dad.
I don't know. I'm thinking about it. I don't know. I can't. If the dad came up with the idea, he could very definitely be sued. If the kid did it, then it's okay.
I'm going to start with this. Unless the kid has a bout with honesty, that's something that we'll never know. And like, that's almost brilliance of the plan, if that's the case. I don't know. Wesley says, good dad. No, wait, great dad. I'm going to say this. The kid gets credit. He gets credit because he figured out a way to get one over on the bully without getting into a fist fight.
What's the age group of this?
It sounds elementary school based on the story. I don't know that it is. The way he's telling the story, and he talks about, you know, it's a bully and it's lunchtime and he steals my kid lunch and says he's too fat to have a lunch like that we pack him. I'm going to make the assumption, we got to work with only the details we have here. I'm going to make the assumption probably like at latest middle school. Let's say sixth grade. Let's put him like right there in the mix. I'm going to say good dad. Kid came up with a plan that didn't involve getting punched in the face because he can't win that fight. Kid came up with a plan, got a little revenge, humiliated said bully. And what are you going to do? All he had to do was not steal my cupcake.
70s, 80s, 90s, good dad. Now, probably not so much because of the scrutiny on things like this. And wouldn't shock me if there's a lawsuit involved. Did he take care of the bully? Yes. but this may end up hurting the entire family in the end.
That's fair. Which is I gotta think in this spot, if your pop's in this spot, right? I think in this spot you gotta tell the kid, hey, this was your idea. No matter, even if it wasn't, this is your idea. You did this. Because what are you gonna do? Bust up a kid for facing down a bully like that? You're gonna sue an 8-year old? I don't know that you can. I mean, you sue the dad, I guess, but like, you're gonna sue the 8-year old? I don't know. I don't know how you play that if you're the parents of the bully.
You should also blame the school in this day and age with things that are happening at schools, recognizing that a kid is being bullied and taking care of it. It's also on the education of the people who are in charge there.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. And Wesley brings up a good point. I think the other thing here is I just tell the kid to tell the authority, hey, listen, man, I've been stopped up. That was a cupcake that I made myself to, get regular is a term that the great one told me that I had never heard before. I needed my laxative cupcake to get regular. And then the bully stole it. It's really his fault. I don't know. I'm going good, Dad.
All right. The first thing that's Xing is Dana White.
I'm assuming it's because Dana White, I saw Dana White on ESPN earlier this morning. There's a UFC event coming up that is going to be in the Sphere, which, okay. I mean, let's see how it looks, I guess. It doesn't really seem like a venue that's set up for that, but I guess you have all the possibilities in the world with that big screen behind the octagon.
They've been talking about this for a year or so, and the amount of money it costs to do what they're going to do. Dana White has said that there's never, ever going to be anything like what you're going to see Saturday night.
I'm intrigued.
Including they put out their Easter eggs, and if you can find the Easter eggs, I believe the amount is $10,000 if you can find all the Easter eggs while watching the broadcast. And that's not for the fighters. I believe that is for people who are watching the broadcast.
What, like on the sphere, on the wall?
On the sphere screen.
Huh. Yes. I mean, listen.
And maybe it's for people in the venue because I don't know how much we're actually going to be able to see of the sphere on the TV broadcast, but I'm sure there'll be several different camera angles.
Yeah, it's an interesting gimmick to get people to tune in. Which, again, this is a gimmick, but so's everything else. Everything's a work.
I'm sure we will go over the card tomorrow because it's a really, really good card. The next thing it's Xing is Jacob Fatu.
Jacob Fatu. So I have not yet gotten a chance. I'm still trying to catch up with I don't know, I'm like 3 days behind. But the Bloodline showed up on NXT last night, is my understanding, and wrecked the place.
Yes, and Fatu's out of control. And I don't think anyone ever hurts this guy. He hurts himself because he has no body control and has no concern for his own body.
He clearly does not. Kayfabe or otherwise. Can I tell you this, though? I kind of love it. I kind of like it. It's been a hot minute.
He gives credence to the new Bloodline.
Oh, for sure. He is what Solo was when Solo initially debuted. And it was like everybody took him very seriously. It has been a hot minute since we have felt like we've had a genuine, dangerous, unhinged heel. And he's all of those things. I'm here for it. I love what he's doing.
All right. The last thing that's Xing is 9/11.
Of course. It is 9/11. We spend today remembering that day from 21 years ago. And I said earlier in the show, and I'll say it again now, sports is unique. Sports is a global human phenomenon, right? Sports are played and celebrated all over the world, but the way that we celebrate sports is something that makes us uniquely American. And the people who would do things like we all experience, those of us that are of that age, 21 years ago, the goal was to disrupt. The goal was to take away from us. It was to take away things that we love. It was to take away our way of life. And to me, the best way to commemorate and to celebrate is to do what we do. It's to love what we love. It's to love those things how we love them. And it's to make sure that we change nothing about what makes being American so damn good. So we did our regular show. I hope that all of you have a regular day. I hope all of you that you enjoy your day. And I hope you take just a few minutes at some point to reflect on what it means for us to be fortunate enough to be sports fans and to be Americans and to enjoy all that comes along with that. That's it for us today. Hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you very much for being here. We will be back tomorrow to do it all over again. Rashad Beard will be here tomorrow at 8:40. Lulu Kessin will be here tomorrow at 8 a.m. straight up to talk Gamecock football and Fight Club with the great Milanzo tomorrow at 9:20 a.m. Don't miss it, because it's going to be a good Thursday. For Lonzo, I'm Rob. Thanks for listening to The Rob Brown Show on your radio. It is The Fan Upstate. Later.